Wonderful to follow such an informative and detailed presentation. I think it's been great. This is the second of two sections, and everybody presented such great presentations yesterday on these same issues. I'm going to talk about psychotropic use in preschool children in 36 state Medicaid programs, talk about monotherapy, and we have some new data I've added about polypharmacy. I don't have any disclosures. I think the genesis for this was Susan's written papers and Ramesh's written papers and Dr. Sito's written papers talking about use in preschool children. We all know that use is increasing, but what I started to see when I was reading the literature was that the very youngest of the young children were not as well represented in the literature as older children, and I knew from looking in this data that Derek and Ramesh had from Medicaid that we were seeing prescribing in this age group, but it just wasn't characterized. So that was the genesis for this work. So just to give you a little background, we know that psychotropic use is increasing in everyone, in adults, and we're seeing the same pattern in children. This is in antipsychotics. It varies a little bit by age groups. We know that older children prescribing increases, as you presented, more than in young children. We know that it's not equally distributed among different drug classes, and what's interesting to me is that prescribing in some of these different indications might well be outpacing the rate of diagnosis, which we don't think has increased as monumentally as the rate in which we're prescribing drugs. So these are figures that I have borrowed from Dr. Olfson and other people in the literature that I think represent these trends. We've discussed in previous presentations why this is problematic, and mostly it's that we're lacking evidence for these drugs being effective and being safe in children because they're tested by the FDA in adults, and we don't know how well what we find in adults applies to children. They're not approved, so all of the use is off-label. We don't really know anything by side effects. We're sort of starting to look at more post-marketing studies, but we really just don't have the evidence base. We don't know, and what I worry about the most with the youngest children is what the long-term consequences are. So are we setting children who are very young on a trajectory for changes in brain development, changes in long-term metabolic processes that we don't understand now by starting them on psychotropics, which are certainly necessary for some children, but we're prescribing them without that full understanding right now. And as work that Derek and Ramesh have done on the economic side is that there's a very significant cost to the Medicaid program that these drugs contribute in. So are we using our resources most effectively when there may be other behavioral health solutions that would be more appropriate for children? So the question that I approach first is just how can we characterize this prescribing? So what is the prevalence of psychotropic prescribing in the age 4 and younger age group in the Medicaid program? And so the data set that we have is Medicaid data from 36 states, so it covers about 90% of the U.S. I think our population was slightly over 3 million children. All of the kids are born in 1999 or 2000. All of the children we're studying are ages 4 and younger, and we classified the drugs by indication. So ADHD, depression and anxiety are grouped, and psychotropic illness and bipolar are grouped. So just to do a very basic first pass by indication. So I'm going to have to read these percentages to you of what we found. So overall, what we found is that 1.2% of kids in these age groups received any psychotropic drug, and the breakdown is that the ADHD medications overall were the most common. This was about 0.61% of kids, followed by the depression anxiety meds. Those were 0.59%. And finally, we had 0.24% were the psychotic illness bipolar drugs. And the most common medications by class were sertraline was the most common antidepressant, risperidone was the most common antipsychotic. The amphetamines, I think, are all generic, so that was the most common stimulant, and caffeine citrate was the most common non-amphetamine stimulant, which was not very common at all. So we fit a logistic regression model, adjusting for the demographic variables that were available in the Medicaid data set, which is gender, race, ethnicity. We looked at the Medicaid plan types, non-HMO, so that was fee-for-service, behavioral managed care, combinations of those and other, and claims diagnosis, meaning ICD-9 code-based diagnoses for those indicated diagnoses, and found that the odds of receiving any psychotropic were increased in male children, decreased in minority children, and having any claims diagnosis significantly elevated your odds of receiving any of these psychotropics, which we would expect. So what we concluded from this is that obviously very young children ages 0 to 4 are receiving psychotropics, you know, despite this limited evidence for whether they're effective and safe in this age group. And clearly we need to do more work to characterize and determine whether this is safe and what the most effective treatment might be. So the second question that led from this project was what the prevalence of polypharmacy in this age group would be. So using the same data, and the same idea is that I looked in the literature, and clearly polypharmacy, depending on combinations and what medications you look at, it's, you know, increasing if you look at antipsychotics, some of the ADHD medications. So there's definitely reason to look at polypharmacy in children. Again, it's problematic for a lot of the same reasons, but it's sort of multiplied because then you have no evidence in monotherapy, but then you're combining agents. So there's certainly evidence that there's higher risk for adverse events when you're combining two agents, and we definitely don't know what the long-term consequences are when we're combining agents that we don't know what the consequences are of using them individually. So I was very interested to see what we would find. So we were just interested in estimating the prevalence, but we also wanted to take a little bit more detailed approach. So we looked at inter versus intra-class polypharmacy, and I will explain this further. We were interested in if we could identify the most common combinations by actual drug agent, and we computed a very similar logistic regression model just for children receiving any polypharmacy to look at, you know, what risk factors might be present. So the way to visually illustrate polypharmacy is interclass polypharmacy is we are looking at the overlap of two agents from different classes, and here we're showing 60 days of overlap, which is very standard in the literature. We looked at both 60 and 30-day polypharmacy just to look at different windows and how that changed our estimate. Intraclass polypharmacy is looking at two different agents from the same class, and this sort of has different implications, so we decided to look at both separately. What we found is, I was actually a little bit surprised that we found, I think, a lower rate of polypharmacy in these very young children than I expected. So we found out of our population of 3 million something children, we found about 385 children met our criteria for having any 30-day polypharmacy, so overlap of any two agents for 30 days. We had 134 of these children have any incidence of 60-day polypharmacy, so two overlapping agents for 60 days. And I was very interested also to know how many children had three or more overlapping agents for at least 30 days, and we found 56 individual children, which was 100 and something incidences of this happening, but we calculated it to be 56 individual children. So this was you mentioned a programming nightmare yesterday in trying to do that. This was, we thought, a simple question, but turned out to be a huge challenge for our very talented programmer to calculate all of these individual overlaps. So the most common overlap of drugs of two different classes were both amphetamine stimulants with risperidone followed by a fluoxetine, which is Prozac, and risperidone. So risperidone is figuring very highly in there. intra-class, we have the first two are both amphetamine stimulates, so children on two different stimulants, and then number three under intra-class, those are two different antidepressants. So I don't know for the clinicians if these are really highly expected combinations or if these are very unexpected. Right. So we fit the same type of logistic regression model, controlling again for the sociodemographic information we have from Medicaid, and we found again that male children had greater odds of receiving any polypharmacy. Minority children had decreased odds of receiving polypharmacy, and children, in this case, not with every claim diagnosis, but just those with ADHD and psychoses had increased odds, and I think that makes sense given those are the stimulants in the kids who are probably getting risperidone. So, protective or lack of access or lots of other issues. I don't know, maybe in this case. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it is protective in this case. So interpretations and conclusions. So I would say it was lower than I was expecting. Maybe my expectation. No. These are very young children, but I think I was expecting a little bit higher rate. Yes, you're right. These are very young children. Again, we have very limited evidence to support this happening, really no evidence. Maybe this is the beginning of generating evidence. The interclass polypharmacy, the overlap of two agents from different classes, was more common, but we sort of talked about it in the interclass. So overlapping agents of the same class might be more troubling, given that we're less sure what's going on with that and what the sort of the clinical basis for that might be. So I work with a really talented child psychiatrist in addition to Ramesh, who specializes in metabolic disorders, and I need to sit down with her and before we do anything else and really hash out, you know, how can we figure out what's going on in the next study. So we also sort of explored, like, what are some potential solutions and what can we think about this, and, you know, this really relies at looking at different levels in which we need to intervene, and there's system factors, you know, access to care and how we reimburse care and how the system is set up in the Medicaid program. There's provider factors in terms of how we're educating providers and are there enough child psychiatrists to go around, and, you know, there's parent factors and school factors and all of these contributing to how we're prescribing. There is certainly some evidence out there that coordination of care and medical homes and pediatrics lead to more coordinated and higher quality care, but I think it's a really complex intermix of all of these levels that we need to think about when we're addressing potential solutions to this problem. I want to acknowledge all of our funding agencies. Ramesh is the PI of, I believe, all of these besides the T32. And thank Ramesh Raghavan and Derek Brown at WashU, Ben Allaire at RTI International, Ginger Nickel at the Department of Psychiatry at WashU, and Raven Ross, the graduate student in our lab. So thank you, and any questions? Okay.
Right.
Right.
A group of children who participate.
Right.
Or to drop out of Medicaid and never come back.
Right.
To get a sense of those. I think you might find some interesting, I'm not sure your results would be any different, but
right.
I think that would give you some visible insights into what's going on.
I think. Do you want me to? Well, I think what you're getting at is what I think is needed in the field. So the way that our data is structured, this is a pooled cross section. So some children show up in the data once, some children show up multiple times. So, right. Well, I think what I believe is needed, and I think what most people believe is needed, is the ability to collect longitudinal data and follow the same children in the same data set. Over time, I don't know if we could manufacture a longitudinal data, like specifically in our data, because our data is I'm sort of repurposing data that was sampled in a frame for another purpose very specifically. I think that what you're getting at is sort of the high quality and the type of sampling that we would need to do some sort of a time-dependent analysis to look at, you know, time to metabolic disease and time to other outcomes, which is right, time to polypharmacy, time to switching, which I think is ideal. Derek and Ramesh, do you want to add to that? It went to 2003, so they're born in 1999 or 2000, and the data goes 2000 to 2003.
Of the entire sample. So if you sort of people to draw the hazard function.
So I was able to do it. So I use VA data for my dissertation, where the number of millions of people you have and the ability to follow for a long time is, you know, probably better than almost any other data set that you can get in this country. And we were modeling, you know, time to incident myocardial infarction, and that's a really rare event. And we were able to do it, and I don't know if rate of MI is greater than what we would expect for this, but we had, I mean, the population that we need, we had more than 500,000 people to start, and, you know, you have people who are probably already at risk for CVD, and so we did it. I mean, you're not going to get a large hazard ratio, but you'll get, we got a significant hazard ratio, but I don't know if we could assemble enough people to make it, I don't know, to make it work. I think that's why we looked by like Red Book and Medicaid Rx indication for the drug. So we included claims diagnosis in the model, sort of just, I was curious, like, is it valid in terms of having a diagnosis actually increase your risk? We wouldn't consider that like a valid diagnosis in that age group, but we're really just sort of grossly categorizing by what the indication of that medication would be. We certainly can't say that a 1 or 2 year old getting this medication is getting it based on, I wouldn't, yeah. Right.
So they're robot.
Right. Right.